So just like the upper part of the house is for the family, also the upper part of your soul is just for a certain amount of people, people that you trust more, people that are your family. You show them more of yourself. You open more the doors of your heart, the doors of your soul to them. Now, in the upper floor, that there are different rooms. There are the rooms of the children, and then there's maybe a TV room upstairs, I don't know. But there's also the room where you and your husband live. And even this is not completely true what I'm gonna say, because me and my siblings, we were always in the room of our parents, and we used to play with my father and just attack him in his bed. Well, but just, let's just try to imagine that, of course, the room where you are with your husband, it's just for you and your husband. It's like you don't, not even the members of the family are invited, because that's like your property. It's like with your husband. It's like a more private area. And in your soul, it's the same thing. There are parts of your soul that are so much yours that you can just share it with your husband. It's like, you share very much with your husband, and you have been doing that for years. Now, this is something that I'm inventing now, because it's not that there are different sections of your room. I mean, your room is just the room where you're with your husband is just one room. But just imagine that there's this desk, maybe where you do your hair or whatever, that is just like you. It's like just yours. And so there's also a part of your soul that your husband has not access to it, but let me explain this. It's not because you want to hide something from your husband, but there are things in each one of our souls that we cannot express it with words. It's just like, I don't know if you follow me, if you've done this experience, but it's something that you just know, something that you just feel, something that it's your experience and you would like to share it, but actually you can't. It's just very much yourself. So we've gone to a more and more and more intimate part of your soul. Now, this is the surprise for you all. Now, in your room, there's like a little door, and it's like, oh, I've never seen this door before. I was not so much aware of this door. Just imagine that the door is here. And you try to open it, you can't open it because it has a lock. So you just need the key, and you can't find a key. So you don't have the key. So it says, hey, wait a minute. You're telling me that there's something in my room that I don't have access to. So something in my soul that I don't have access to? Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. It's this part that is even more you than anything else. It's like the most intimate part of your soul. And it's a place where you can't go. Sounds very strange. The thing is that in that room, inside of that door, if you just knew what was on the other side, it's Jesus. Jesus is there. It's like, and when you open that door, normally you open that door when you die, or actually, to say it more precisely, when you reach heaven, then the door is open, and Jesus is there waiting for you, and he tells you, welcome, and then he says your name. Now, your name, the name that he says, it's not the name that you have right now. So he doesn't say, oh, welcome, Patty. Because that name, Patty or Christy, were names that were given to you by your parents. And your parents had the right to give you your name, first of all, because they're your parents. And second of all, because they love you, and they just said, what is the name that we're going to call her? And it's important to choose a name, because that's the name that is gonna make possible a relationship between us. I mean, names are very important because they enable relationship. But the first relationship that you had was not even the relationship with your mother. I mean, you could think, oh, well, I was in the womb of my mother, so the first relationship that I ever had was in the womb of my mother. No, because your mother didn't bring you to creation. She didn't create you. No, not even the combination of your father and your mother did create you. God created you. And creation is a vocation. A vocation in the sense that you are called to creation. It's like someone is like, come out of nothing, come. And when God told you, come, He called you by a name. And that name, if your parents have the right to give you a name because they love you, that name was the most pure love for you that anyone could have. So it's the calling of your name, like with full love. And that means the calling of what you fully are. That's who you really are. And the name coincides with your identity. Can you imagine that? It's just wonderful that I can say my name is this, and it's not just my name, but that's fully what I am. And there's no name that any one of us has that just expresses our identity, everything that we are, our heart, our soul. There isn't such a thing. So in the Bible, we see that there are people who go deeper in their names, and they even change names to bring them closer to the plan that God had for them, who they really are. One example is Peter. His name was not Peter, his name was Simon. But then Jesus said, you're not Peter anymore. You're not Simon anymore. You're Peter. It's like, oh, because you are the stone, you are the rock over which I will build my church. And that's very deep. Or the moment in which Jacob was not Jacob anymore. He was Israel. So, and because there was so much behind it. But maybe the best example of such a thing, because maybe Peter was going to develop to an even deeper name, I don't know. But Mary was called Mary, and then it comes an angel and tells her, you're the full of grace. Which, when we pray the Hail Mary, we say Hail Mary full of grace. It's like an adjective. We're saying you're Mary and you are full of grace. But maybe you've heard this before, but when the angel appeared to Mary, he was not saying, Mary, you are full of grace, but he was saying, Mary, you are the full of grace. I mean, that's your name. The name is Kecharitomene in Greek. So that's your name. So she was like scared, and many interpret scared because of, I don't know, oh, an angel appears. It's like a ghost, no, or like, I don't know how I can imagine the apparition of an angel, but it's like, whoa, this is not normal. So I get scared. But I believe that Mary got even more scared because she really did feel, she had this feeling that this door was opening. And it's like, whoa, this angel or knows me better than I know myself. And that's what I really am. A little bit, imagine like Mary remembered the moment in which God called her into existence. And it's like, oh, wow, I heard this name before. But it's in a situation so far away, so deep inside, that it sounds awesome. So she feels the awe. It's like, wow, who is this? No, it's like, I know who you are because God sent me. So this is like my card, my presentation card. It's like, I know who you are, and only God knows who you are. Therefore, I am a messenger for God the Most High, the one who created you. Well, I think you get the idea of identity. Now, this identity thing sounds interesting, that I'm also going to find my identity and and that God knows my identity. But for two questions. First of all, what does that have to do with my life, this identity, in like the whole context of my relationship with God? And second question, how do I know all these things? I mean, where in the Bible, where does the Bible speak about such things? Well, just to answer that last question, I'm going to give you three examples. Of course, there are more obvious examples, but there are more examples if you try to read the Bible with this filter. The first example is, and it's a very beautiful example, you find it in the book of the prophet Isaiah. In the book of the prophet Isaiah, starting in chapter 61, you read the following thing. I will rejoice heartily in the Lord. My being exults in my God, for he has clothed me with garments of salvation and wrapped me in a robe of justice. Like a bridegroom adorned with a diadem, as the bride adorns herself with her jewels, as the earth brings forth its shoots and a garden makes its seeds spring up, so will the Lord make justice spring up and praise before all the nations. Now, we still haven't reached the point where it speaks about the name, but this is the context, and the context is that your heart exults. When you open the door, it just feels like this is it. This is what I was born for. This is what I came in the world for. Because you remember first question in your catechism when you were getting ready for your first communion. What is the sense of life? And we used to answer something like, sense of life is to know and to love Jesus Christ already in this world, to be with him in the eternal life. So this experience of the love of Jesus Christ has a lot to do with the knowledge that I was made for him, and that he is really the reason of my life, and that he is really my husband. He is the bridegroom, and this whole life is like a wedding, and it's me just moving forward in that hallway of the church, going towards my bridegroom in front of the altar, where I'm gonna get married and I'm gonna be with him forever and ever. It's not a marriage till death do you part, but it's a marriage for good. So that is our life. That is what we're doing here on earth. We're here to go to Jesus. And we all know that. But this experience of him just taking your hand in front of the altar, and he's calling you my bride, but he's not even calling you my bride. He's calling you with that name that sounds so fulfilling. It's like, this is it, and there's nothing higher than this. He called me the way he called me first. And throughout my life, throughout my walk in this hallway, he only saw me with these eyes. He saw me like this bride in this white robe, walking towards him with the eyes full of love. And that is the key to understand God's mercy. Because when we say, I've sinned so much, how can you forgive me? Now I come to confession again, but I mean, I am such a liar. Or I'm such a person that does this, or I'm such a person that does that. For God is like, you're not that. Sin is precisely what we are not. That's what, it's the negation of our true identity. Every time that we sin, we're just not being ourselves. That's the definition of sin. We're not being ourselves. And he's not really watching what we're not. He's watching what we are. So he's watching the holy person that you were in the moment of your creation, and he's watching the holy person that is going to be with him in eternity. That's what he sees, and that's the only thing that he sees. So his forgiveness is like just bringing us back to reality. We were off. We were not in the reality anymore. And he's just bringing us back to reality. No, no, this is what you are. This pure person that is going to leave the confessional, this beautiful bride, that's what you really are. So just go and continue your walk, and we'll meet later for the rest of eternity. So for him, mercy is taken for granted because he cannot see you in a different way. So God will never say you're such a wretch or something like that, because that's what you're not. You're not. You're not what is not right. So that's why the heart here for the prophet Isaiah rejoices, because the heart has really found something that was always looking for. And that's why Jesus Christ is the King of our hearts. So what else does that, how does this continue in the prophet Isaiah? For Zion's sake, I will not be silent. For Jerusalem's sake, I will not keep still until her vindication shines forth like the dawn. Her vindication, her identity, and her salvation like a burning torch. Nations shall behold your vindication, and all kings your glory. You shall be called by a new name, bestowed by the mouth of the Lord. You shall be a glorious crown in the hand of the Lord, a royal diadem in the hand of your God. No more shall you be called forsaken, nor your land called desolate, but you shall be called, my delight is in her, and your land espoused. For the Lord delights in you, and your land shall be espoused. For as a young man marries a virgin, your builder shall marry you, and as a bridegroom rejoices in his bride, so shall your God rejoice in you. So that's what we're contemplating. That's why Jesus is the King of our hearts. But there's also things, very beautiful things in the New Testament about names. You know that very famous passage of the letter of Paul to the Corinthians about charity. Charity is, like, I'll show you a better way in charity, and it's like a song of charity. Well, at the end, or starting already in the middle of this song and continuing till the end of the song, we read the following thing. Love never fails. If there are prophecies, they will be brought to nothing. If tongues, they will cease. If knowledge, it will be brought to nothing. For we know partially, and we prophesy partially. But when the perfect comes, that partial will pass away. So what does he mean right now in partially, according to our talk today? Partial means that you haven't been able to open this door. So you don't know who you really are. You don't know. We don't know. We're just finding out. That's what we're here for. And we're waiting for it. The moment in which we know is the moment in which we're ready to enter his kingdom. So in a certain way, if you want to live, it's good for you not to know now, because if you know, you won't wake up tomorrow. So we still don't know. We know partially. But when perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I used to talk as a child, think as a child, reason as a child. When I became a man, when I became a woman, you can say that, I put aside childish things. At present, we see indistinctly, as in a mirror, but then face to face. At present, I know partially, then I shall know fully as I am fully known. That is very beautiful. As I am fully known, and I shall know as I am fully known. That means exactly what I was telling you. Somebody knows us better than ourselves. Somebody loves us better than we love ourselves. And that's a pure love that we don't have for ourselves. Not yet. At present I know partially, then I shall know fully as I am fully known. So faith, hope, love remain, these three. But the greatest of these is love. And only a person who loves knows. You know your children better than anyone else, not because they're your children, but because you love them. That's the reason why you know your children. And let's just consider one more passage of the New Testament. And this is in the book of Revelation. I don't like this translation of this Bible. I like the one from the other Bible better. But let's just, I'll tell you what both say. This is the context of those letters that Jesus writing to the different churches of antiquity. And this is the letter to the church in Pergamum. So it's a dialogue between God and the churches that he loves. And he says in Revelation 2, chapter 2, verse 17, whoever has ears ought to hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the victor, I shall give some of the hidden manna. I shall also give him a white amulet upon which is inscribed a new name, which no one knows except the one who receives it. So in the other Bible, it is written, I shall give some of the hidden manna. I shall give him a white stone upon which it is inscribed a new name, which no one knows except the one who receives it. Now, of course, you can say immediately, okay, then that white stone is what we receive the moment we open the door. And it's like, hey, this is your identity. This is your real name. Oh, this is my real name. But the fact that he says that there's a white stone, or a white amulet, if you want to call it like that, and that the whole book of Revelation is a book that has a lot to do with liturgy, then you understand that that white stone is the Eucharist. And that every time that we are receiving the Eucharist, we are receiving our true identity. We are one with Jesus in the Eucharist. That's what the Eucharist is. That's the definition of Eucharist. So the moment where we're receiving the Eucharist, we're already partially making an experience of the moment in which we're opening the door. And I don't know if once I did another morning of reflection, but I don't remember if it was here in New Jersey. And I told them, I spoke about the Mass. And I'm not going to say everything that I said now. And I mean, you're gonna end up like, yes, that was kind of nice, but I didn't fully understand it because we didn't have the time to explain it more. But let's just put it like this. In the moment of the offertory, it's not just that you give some $20 or whatever and to move to the altar as a gift. But those $20, let's just say that it's $20, are just symbolic of something that is yours that you are giving in the Mass. Something that kind of hurts a little bit because you could have used them for something else, but no, you say, let's just gonna use it for the church or for whatever, the offerings. But actually, that is nothing, because even if you give $2 million, that is nothing. Why? Because in every single Mass, because you're participating in the Mass, you're giving yourself in that basket. You're putting yourself wholly, like your whole heart, your whole personality, your whole soul is going there, because that's what God is asking from you in every single Holy Mass. So the $20 is not comparable with what you're worth. there's no quantity enough for what you're worth. But that's what you're doing. Actually, that is the deeper sense of what the spirituality of the martyrs is. The deepness of the spirituality of the martyrs is that they were already martyrs in the Mass, and they understood that, and they were glad to give their lives to Jesus because they had already given their lives to Jesus. So potentially we're all martyrs because we are giving our life to Jesus in every Holy Mass. Of course, we don't fully understand that, because even the Mass is that way to the last Mass, where we really understand everything that happened in this world with Masses and everything, and we just couldn't take it before. We need a much stronger soul to have the knowledge to understand fully what was happening here, because if someone just tells us now, we'll die. It's just too much. It's like, we'll just explode. So we don't want to know everything right now. But let me tell you this. The thing is that once you're there in the altar with Jesus, and when the offerings are consumed, they're taken to heaven, literally, during the Mass. You are taken to heaven during the Mass because you were there with Jesus. So it's like you touched heaven and then you came back from heaven. And what is in the altar is, yes, it's the body of and the body and blood of Christ, but it's also you glorified. So you are eating yourself. You're not just eating Jesus. You're eating yourself. You're eating communion with God. So you are giving that white stone, and your name is there. You still are not ready to hear it, but it's already there. So this is something wonderful that is happening. And going back to the house and to your soul, that's how we understand that Jesus is the King of our hearts. Now, I think we'll finish this first meditation here. We were going to have this until 10:15, and it's 10:30, so it's okay. And then in the next talk, when we have our adoration, it will be a little bit shorter. I will explain to you also how it works and what can you do to grow deeper into the knowledge of Christ spiritually, so that you can get closer and closer to your name, but most important, to your bridegroom. Okay, good. So let's just not pray. Just like continue our. Yeah, our internal meditation, and now we have a break. You can go to the kitchen. There are many good things there in the kitchen, and I'll figure out how to stop this recording.